Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Peace.
Broadcast, and tonight we are honored and pleased and privileged to have as our guest Dr. Rashid Nouri, a food revolutionary, author, jazz lover, who has spent a lifetime involved in agricultural production and the local food movement. He will be our guest, so as soon as the break is over, we'll be live with Brother Rashid Nouri. Don't touch your dial. We'll be right with you. Welcome, brothers and sisters, and yes, we are the drum, calling our people to self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Good evening, family, and welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 until 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have a sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join the conversation this evening, call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone if you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you're on your computer, go to our website, www.usliftingus.com. Click on the Ulu Radio tab, and then click on Listen Live, and that will bring you into the studio, and you can ask your question or make your comment. My name is Brother Kimbizi. I'm one of the founding board members of Us Lifting Us. And we are pleased and excited to have with us this evening Brother Rashid Nouri, food revolutionary, has been a pioneer in the local food movement and community-supported agriculture. He has spent 50 years traveling the globe, growing food on 4 continents. He has written a compelling and exciting book called Growing Out Loud, Journey Food Revolutionary. If you don't have that in your library, you must quickly go to Amazon or your local book distributor and get a copy of this volume. I guarantee you it will transform your life. Let me pause here real quickly and just say good evening, Brother Nuri. How are you feeling?
Peace be unto you, brother. I am absolutely amazing. So pleased to be with you this evening.
Okay. We're going to get started, and let me begin with a quote from your book. You write, "Revolution is not blowing up buildings and killing people. That's rebellion. Revolution is creating institutions that can carry us into the next stage of civilization." That's on page 255. I found this statement to be radically profound and profoundly challenging to all who are serious about liberation and sovereignty for Black people here in the U.S., and especially for Africans on the continent. And so in our time together this evening, I'd like to explore with you this statement and others, drawing upon your vast experience and knowledge. And so first, what do you mean by this quote? Revolution is building institutions that can carry us into the next stage of civilization. Kind of highlight that for us, if you would.
Yes, I will. No problem. If you don't mind, you can also, my book, and I appreciate that advert that you gave for my book, you can get it from my website also, the nurigroup.com. It's probably easier, and that way I can sign it for you if you want it.
That would be perfect. Give us your website so that we have that. Write this down, family. You're going to want to do this.
TheNuriGroup.com. My name is spelled N as in Nancy, U-R-I. TheNuriGroup.com is my website.
Okay. TheNuriGroup.com. And if they go there, they can. There'll be a tab where they can order the book. Is that right?
Yes, sir. It says click on book. Take
okay.
You right to it.
All right.
Now, that's the question about revolution. Right? You know, I'm a child of the 60s. I saw all of the energies that went into burning buildings and robbing the stores. But what we didn't do, we were mad because they had white folks in the community and others selling us goods and services, and we didn't have our own. The civil rights movement did a good job of disintegrating the Black community. That's another discussion. But if you're burning down a building in the neighborhoods that we live, that did nothing to build the community. It meant you had no grocery store to go to, no place to buy clothes or furniture. We didn't build institutions in their place. So that became rebellion, we were shut down. What I'm interested in the organizations that I worked with at the time, we tried to build – we did build in the place, in the absence of institutions that served us. It makes no sense to shut down a grocery store if you don't have a place to buy food. And if you decide you want to overturn a current system, you have to have something in its place to build. When my brother is an undergraduate school, I studied the men and the women who created the post-colonial world. I was born in 1947. That was the year I was conceived in 1947, and that's the year that India got its independence and was the first nation that did, and able to see what happened in Asia and Africa over those many years, and how the brothers and the sisters who led those post-colonial, provided the post-colonial leadership, they had to build economic base. They had to build schools, had to provide hospitals, because the colonial regimes no longer were doing that for the people to the extent that they ever did. And I think that was out of that experience that I realized burning down the buildings is not enough. We got to build institutions that are going to support our people, support our families, support the community into the future. And by God's grace, we're seeing more and more of that across the world and in this country, particularly now, with this food, this pandemic. There's a greater interest in food production, and that's a good thing. Did I get to your question?
Yes, you did. Did you want to say anything about you mentioned building institutions is very clear for many of us. Was there something else that you were also saying to us in that statement and carry the world into the next stage of civilization? That struck me as being a very powerful thought as well.
The next stage of civilization. excuse me. When I talk about civilization, it's how we live with one another, how we get along with one another, the support that we give one another. What I've said over the years, that we build food, we grow people, and we grow community. Pardon me, that was another line coming in.
Okay.
And how we learn to cooperate with each other and work to build the community, sustain the community, is very important. That's why the 10-point appeal and plan for the new black economy that Lulu has put together is so significant, because in there it's talking about how we're going to work together, cooperation, cooperatives, economic development cooperative. And I think that is really quite as simple. Essential, and number one, as black people, we take full responsibility for the economic destiny of our communities and nation. That's what I'm talking about. I think that's really wonderful.
Okay, and thank you for that. You write also that you see yourself, you made that statement, in order to have a viable community, you must be able to free feed, clothe, and shelter your people. All the health, all the wealth, all the life comes from the soil. Before we go further, our audience in particular, Brother Nuri, as we are people of African ancestry, I thought it would be helpful as a way of grounding you and grounding us. You had an epiphany while you were engaged in your academic development that kind of gave you your focus and your sense of purpose. If you would share that, and then we can segue into the importance of this idea of being able to feed yourself. So if you don't mind, would you kind of share that aspect of your life with us?
Yeah, sir. It wasn't no kind of gave direction. It was complete by God's grace. I was, as I said, I was studying the men and women who created the post-colonial world. I was interested in health and nutrition. But being a child of the 60s, you know, black power, we talked about black power and nation building. I needed a practical skill. I knew where I went to college, they teach you how to read, write, and think, but not any specific skill. So I didn't know. I was trying to decide if I wanted to be a carpenter, to build houses, or a printer to facilitate communication. And this writing this paper on theory and practice, comparing the work of Jomo Kenyatta in Kenya and Julius Nyerere in Tanzania. I came across a statement in a book by Tom Mboya, who was the finance minister in Kenya. Let me just back up just a hair for those who may not be familiar with those folks' names. Jomo Kenyatta was the pure capitalist in Kenya. Julius Nyerere tried to build African socialism, Ujamaa, in Tanzania. So their work differed, and that's what I was examining. But Tom Mboya, the finance minister, said, with all the technology in the world today, there's no reason we could not chemically synthesize enough food to feed all the people. And that just struck me. I said, wow, that is strange, because it's all these chemicals that are killing people. And just then, I used to describe it as a suit of clothes coming out of the sky. But as I've gotten older, I realized it was God spoke in my ear and says, learn everything you can about food from the seed to the table and do it experientially. And that's when my path began from there. Because I'm a city boy. I was born in Boston, grew up in cities, went to 14 schools before I graduated high school out in San Diego, California. There was no tradition in my family around agriculture, but that is what I was told to do, and that is the path that I have pursued for well over 50 years.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that as part of your journey, you became very clear that any kind of sovereignty, any kind of liberation, any kind of meaningful freedom must begin with controlling your own ability to feed yourself.
That's right. Whoever controls your food controls you. This has been one of the control mechanisms that white folks have had over black people, whether you're in jail, on the plantation, anyway, anywhere you are, whoever controls your food controls you. There was a statement, Henry Kissinger said that, whoever controls the food, control the food, control the people. Control the oil, control the nation. Control the money, control the world. And those cliches, they're not cliches. Those axioms have proven true to me. You have to control your food. If you're going to build an economy, it has to be around the food. As you already said, if I can't take care of my family, if I can't provide food for my family, how am I going to be a husband or a father? Well, the same for the community and the nation. Whoever controls your food controls you. It's a powerful, powerful mechanism of control is the food. You know, often many of us have heard how people are starving in a particular country. There's never been a shortage of food in the world. What has been short is who controls it and allowing the food to get to the people. If you starve the people, if you control all the food, transportation, production, you can have full control over population. And I didn't want to see that happen. So since all wealth, all health, all life begins and ends in the soil, this is what people are fighting for all around the world, the politics. And if you follow the money, it's about controlling the resources that exist wherever we are. Your America now has an Africa command. We've gone through a couple paid stages of colonialism, controlling the land in Africa, Asia. This is what has allowed Europeans to dominate the world for as many years as they had. But that has changed. And the fight is over the land itself. Africa has become so important to the world that we're having a second colonization of it. This time it's neocolonialism, controlling through the monetary functions, because that's where all the strategic metals are. You want to build bombs, you want to build telephones, these phones that everybody carries around have strategic metals in them that you can only get in Africa. So this is why folks are trying to get. You control the land, you control the resources, that is how you can control the world. That's what they're trying to do.
Okay, family, we are talking with Brother Rashid Nuri, author of the book Growing Out Loud, Journey of a Food Revolutionary. Not only an author, but a lifelong activist in the consumer-supported agricultural movement, a pioneer of that movement, as a matter of fact. So if you have questions or you want to make a comment, you can join the conversation. Call 929-477-2789. You press the number 1 on your phone. That will raise your hand. In the studio, we'll know that you have a comment or a question, and we'll open the line and allow you to make your comment. Brother Nuri, we're going to take a brief music break, and when we come back on the other side of the break, you touched upon it lightly, and we were talking about this before we went on air. The coronavirus is certainly bringing into bold relief and making it so clear to everybody. The fragility of the current food system and why this is problematic on so many levels. So we want to look at that when we come back from the break. Family, just stay with us, and we will be right back on the other side of the break. Thank you. And family, we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dare to Win, Us Lifting Us, Thursday night radio broadcast. We come to you every Thursday evening from 9 to 10 via Blog Talk. And as we've said earlier, our special guest is Brother Rashid Nuri, who has authored a very powerful memoir and a compelling manual for revolutionary change. His book is Growing Out Loud, Journey of a Food Revolutionary. Brother Rashid did his undergraduate work at Harvard, then went on to the University of Massachusetts, where he studied soil and plants and plant biology and gained his master's. And then he gained his PhD by growing food on four continents on the planet. And so he speaks to us from a wealth of experience. So if you're listening by your computer or you're on the phone, please call in. Talk to the brother. He has a tremendous amount of wisdom and knowledge to share with us. As we said just before we went to break, we wanted to talk about the negative health impacts of the coronavirus. And especially given the fact that the number of people who have died from the coronavirus are disproportionately African American. And I can't help but think that, and they say this is due to underlying health conditions, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, etc. I think that this is directly traced to a woefully inadequate nutrition. And it also exposes how the industrial agriculture is harming both the planet and human beings. The planet from the standpoint of monocropping and then the genetically modified seeds and genetically modified organisms that wind up on our plates. So Brother Nuri, help us to understand what all that is and what we must do in response to that.
Well, you could have written my book. I talk about all those things and those connections in that book. You know, break the question down. What would you like me to address?
Well, let's talk about, first of all, the failing of the existing industrial agricultural mechanism, and be very clear for us to understand how it is harming both planets and people. Then what you see as the solution?
The solution is small farms and urban organic agriculture is where we need to go. All right, so I'll give you an answer. Beginning, you know, we used to live within walking distance of where our food was produced. That world does not exist anymore. And we've come further and further away from our source of our sustenance. The average food on your table has traveled 1,500 to 2,000 miles on average to get to you. It has lost nutrition. It's already begun. It's not fresh. Fresh food is what you get in your garden or by walking to a farmer's market in town and being picked up. And that the process of deterioration in the agricultural system really began to take place back in the 1940s. There were several things that happened. One, it began to hybridize the seed. We used, you know, the whole concept of tithing, coming out of church, giving a 10% of your income back to the spiritual center, came from agriculture because farmers used to say for every 10 ears of corn that they harvested, one corn ear would go back into the crib to feed the seed the next year so you could replant it. Can't do that anymore. Between hybridization and then in the 90s, GMO production, genetically modified organisms, were introduced into the process. The food that we are eating, the human bodies have not evolved sufficiently to metabolize what's been put on our tables in front of us. And if you can go look at a chart of the increase of these diseases in obesity. Polio, there's a lot of stuff that has happened, and there's a straight line increasing
And then 1996, GMOs were introduced, and that went straight up in terms of the problems. Now, one of the things that happened at the end of the Second World War, all those munition manufacturers wanted to keep making money. War is a very profitable endeavor. First time, only time you ever had a recession in a war was when the U.S. invaded Iraq and Afghanistan early in this century. So the munition manufacturers needed a place to use all that to continue selling the gunpowder that goes into the bullets and the bombs. And how they what they did, it's the fertilizer is ammonium nitrate. Ammonium nitrate is the chemical that was used to blow up the building in Oklahoma back in the mid-90s. They gave that to the farmers to put into the soil to grow the food. Now, that ammonium nitrate kills all the life that is in the soil. The chemical industry, the oil industry, has been given all kinds of chemicals, pesticides, herbicides, fertilizers, to grow this food, to push the production of this food. And if the food does, if the soil is unhealthy, the plants that grow from that are going to be unhealthy. And the reason they have to use so many chemicals, pesticides, to grow that food is because the natural production, the natural protection which comes from a healthy soil is not there. So you got a confluence of several different things. The hybridization was promoted by the Secretary of Agriculture was Henry Wallace. You got Norman Borlaug. You go down to Mexico to come up with the hybridization of the corn. Then in the Philippines, it was rice. They did the same kind of hybridization with the wheat. And the problem was that you cannot take those seeds and put them back in the ground. Because there's been a crossbreeding of different genetic material, it requires you to go back to the big seed companies to buy the seed. This is the implementation of corporate control of the agricultural processes. When man, there's no culture without agriculture, and when man started, agriculture really begins, most times people think it was in Mesopotamia. Mesopotamia is where the, tens of thousands of years ago, where the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers come together in what is modern-day Iraq. So there's some ironies in that in itself, which we can explain. We can go as deep as you want in this thing. But we're producing food that is unhealthy. Our own food is killing us. This is why local small farms and urban agriculture is so important, so that we can produce the food that can heal us. Now, I was in New Orleans at the beginning of March, just before they shut down the country and put us on the social distancing. And people, I was at a food conference. People started leaving because they were concerned. That there's so much fear and panic. It was really amazing. I didn't even go out in the streets in New Orleans, and that was a good thing, because New Orleans ended up being one of the center of this pandemic. But folks were calling me, sending me texts, what do we do, what do we do, what do we do? And the best COVID-19 response that I heard came from a sister named Jessica, and asked if she was prepared for the chaos. She said her cupboards contained a reasonable amount of food, but most importantly, she still had greens in her garden. Food was growing in the ground at the home where she lived. And people now beginning to understand how important it is as they go to the grocery stores and the shelves are empty. Even the food shops that usually so well stocked by Whole Foods and Publix and Kroger, their shelves are empty because they can't get all the stuff. But if you're growing, they can't get the supplies. If you're growing your own food in your yard, in your garden, or within walking distance of where you live, you have some food security. That's brief. Mm-hmm. But I think a great place to begin.
Okay, so and by the way, just can you break down the meaning of the word hybridization? Oftentimes,
yes,
that word is spoken, and I'm not quite sure we understand what is meant by that.
Well, okay, there are two kinds. Plants in nature will naturally cross with themselves. Okay, and create new variations. You can see this with pansies. This work has been demonstrated for many, many generations. That's how you get strong plants. But a hybridization is taking, you have a plant that grows, and it'll have two parents, and you can go, that's called the F1. Sometimes you go back to the F2, which are the grandparents. So it'd be four type of plants that are crossed to come up with two to make the one. And what you want to do is be able to take that plant that you're in the ground, save those seeds, put them back into the ground, and get the same. You would anticipate getting the same product back. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen with hybridization. You'll get a throwback to some of the previous generations of seeds, what the characteristics of that plant were. And that means what you put in the ground, you can't replicate. You have to go to the seed companies to get it. So it's a hybridization. That is the hybridization process, and that's done at the universities to create the crops and the food that people are eating. Contrast that with GMO. GMO is genetically modified organization. I think it means God move over, because the food scientists and the plant scientists think they know more than God does in the production of the life on this planet. But that is the GMOs take a gene that is not anywhere near connected to the plant itself, inject it, and then put it out there, so it can be planted. And some of the things that are injected, they will put a gene in tomato so it can handle a fish gene, in fact, so they can handle the cold better, or to be able to resist weeds, or resist insects. These are injected into the plant, it's put in the ground. So you have these strange genes that are not actually plants being ingested, eaten, attempt to be metabolized by folks, and that GMO, Frankenfood is what I call it, is what is really killing people, and it's very, very dangerous. Is that a little clearer?
It is. So if I understood you correctly, hybridization takes place naturally in nature, but there's also this artificial hybridization that is being done in these university laboratories. And that's problematic.
Yes,
because those seeds can't be reproduced. You got to go back to the seed manufacturers to get seed. So I've heard you talk about heirloom seeds. So you mentioned seeds. Say something about heirloom seeds and why these are important for people who are thinking about growing having their own garden.
Heirloom seeds and open pollinated varieties are very important, because many old farm families have kept seed in their sheds from several generations back. They continue to plant the same thing. Now, there may be some crossbreeding, but they're still pure seed, heirloom, passed down from generation to generation. And that's the stuff, the kinds of seed that one should buy. When you go into store, you want to get open-pollinated heirloom seeds, not anything that's called a hybrid, and they'll say it on the F1 hybrid. These are crosses. Just to clarify a little bit of what you said, crossbreeding happens naturally where the hybridization is not natural. Those are some of the distinctions.
Okay, got you. So all of the hybridization is artificial?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Okay. All right. Okay. So that helps us to understand and just add one more piece to that while you're at it. Say something about how devastating monocropping is. Tell us what that is, and then the problem that it creates.
One of the nice things about being interviewed is because it brings out stuff out of me. But I've often said the questions are more important than the answers. And you are very astute, brother. I appreciate this opportunity to share with the audience, and you are asking the right question. I appreciate it. Okay, the monocropping is the modality that has been employed by Big Ag. You will go out into the country, you'll see one field that has one type of crop in there and nothing else. Most often there will be no weeds. It looks absolutely gorgeous. If you see one plant all at the same level, the plants will grow at the same height. It's just perfectly manicured. And all of that is unnatural. It's all based upon oil production. And the monocropping kills the soil. First of all, you have hybrid plants that are out there with pesticides, herbicides, insecticides that have been sprayed on them. You can't go eat anything out there. You dig in the soil, clearest indication of the quality of your soil and the number of earthworms that you're going to find. You go out into a Big Ag field, you will find no life, no roly-polies, no millipedes, centipedes, no earthworms anywhere in there. And this is because the soil is dead. These farmers are using the soil as a receptacle for the roots and nothing else. A healthy, before hybridization, corn and wheat would grow at different heights. And that made it difficult, more work to get it harvested. So, but the hybridization process made sure that everything was uniform so you can get those tractors in there to be able to get that stuff out. That, they're killing the soil. The plants themselves are unnatural. We can't metabolize them. It's monocropping. That is the biggest problem that you have. In nature, you go out in any woods around you, and you'll find varieties of trees, all kind of weeds out there. At Truly Living Well Center for Natural Urban Agriculture that I founded many years ago, we always told people to emulate nature, how the trees grow. And no one does any in the woods. No one's doing soil tests or putting out fertilizer. It's just very natural growth. The trees grow. They drop the leaves fall to the ground. They break down. You turn over the leaves when they're on the ground, and you see mold that's underneath them and all kinds of life, all kinds of insects in there. None of that will you find in monoculture. It's just one variety, one crop, dead soil, and the scientists are saying they know more about growing stuff. And so to do that, every year requires greater inputs of fertilizer, greater amounts of herbicides and insecticides, more chemicals. All of it's oil-based. If you trace it back, you'll see it's the oil companies that really run this thing. And as I said earlier, you control the food, you control the people, control the oil, you control the nation. So you have a combination of those two things, oil and food, you got people. You got, that's what put us in the situation we are. So a monocrop means you only have cotton, you only have corn, you only have wheat. You don't have a variety of plants, creating a biodiverse and eco-diverse system that invites the beneficial insects, the beneficial birds, all coming in. So the pollination is taking place in the field, and you've created a community in the ground, which is natural.
Wow. Thank you for that. We're going to take a quick break, music break, family. Just 2 minutes. Stay with us. And on the other side of the break, we're going to get really into the local food production movement and community-supported agriculture, which Brother Nuri has been a pioneer in. So we're going to take this quick break, and we'll be right back on the other side of the break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Saunders and Naima. We try to keep the music calm. We're in a moment of panic and a lot of questions, and we're not quite sure of what's going on around us. It's good to be able to kind of calm down a minute, meditate a little bit, get in touch with your roots, ground yourself in spirit, and we discover that we have the answers inside of ourselves. If you're just joining us, this is Us Lifting Us Dare to Win Thursday program, and we are very privileged and honored to have with us tonight Brother Rashid Nouri, author of Growing Out Loud, Journey of a Food Revolutionary, and he is indeed that and so much more. To join the program, to call us, dial 929-477-2789 and press the number 1 on your phone. That will get you into the studio. We'll see your hand, and we'll open your line for your comment or your question. Others who may be joining us online, you go to our website, usliftingus.com. You'll see a Listen Live radio tab. You click on that, and that will allow you to join the broadcast as well. Just before we went on break, Brother Nouri, you were helping us understand how the current agricultural model that the entire world is under has really reduced the soil to where it is depleted and unable to produce nutritious food. And by consuming that food, human health has failed around the globe. And so you say the solution is to get back to local food production. So tell us a little about your history with community-supported agriculture. I know you started a garden on the West Coast back in the 80s or the 90s. So take us from there and bring us up to truly living well in the time that we have, so that our listeners can understand that this is work all of us can do, and we all must be involved in at one level or another if we intend to be healthy, whole, and sane.
There's a whole bunch in there.
Take whatever piece you want to start with.
All right. Much of the world has taken on the American, the Western industrial agricultural process, but not all the world. And this is what I discovered as I've been able to work and travel. I've worked in over 35 countries around the world and been able to see local food economies at work, be able to see small farms and urban agriculture. Most of the world is moving towards urbanization, but it's the West that's primarily urbanized. My work in this, after I graduated university, the very first thing I did out of school was to build community gardens, work with the children in school. We had urban farms there. And this is back in the early 70s. People think I'm crazy now. You can imagine what they thought back then. Talking about organic agriculture and working to help get food distributed and people to create food self-sufficiency and food sovereignty. So I said my work is been able to see what has gone on, how it's gone on. And after I was in Ghana before I came to Atlanta. And I came to Atlanta with the idea of creating the Truly Living Well Center for Natural Urban Education, Natural Urban Agriculture, which is an education and training facility. So twice now I have been able to build in Atlanta the largest farms in the city. First we had a 6-acre farm, which was down in the old Fourth Ward, and the last one was in College Town, over just down the street from the Morehouse Stadium. That was over 7 acres where we built. We were able to train people. So many folks in this town have come through Truly Living Well. Is a volunteer, employee, buying food from us and distribute, taking one of the classes. We work with the schools. M. Agnes Jones Elementary School was the first STEM-certified school in Atlanta public school system. And the principal of tell you that how they got their certification was because of the connection with Truly Living Well, where they're able to bring children to the garden to be able to see
and the teachers can come out there to get their advance, the certificates they need. I just lost the name of that. Yeah, we had to step. So I just lost my place. That was part of the question that you asked me.
We're looking at community supported agriculture and these community gardens.
Community supported agriculture. That's a program that was first introduced in Europe and Scandinavia, where people would pay in advance to purchase the food. And this is how a farmer was able to get support in the beginning of the year. In terms of cash flow, farmers need money in the springtime to be able to buy seed, compost, fertilizer, to put the crop in the ground. And community-supported agriculture, the consumers would pay in advance so the farmer could have some money, and then they come and pick up their food as it comes out of the ground, as it's harvested. And it was a very good system because it built community. That way folks who were not farming were able to have an invested interest in the food that was coming out, and it was all part of what I call a horticultural literacy process. I think it's extraordinarily important to know who grows your food, the quality of your food, and where your food comes from. And that's what the CSAs, Community Supported Agriculture, that's what it did. That's what it promulgated. Folks getting closer to it. And when they come out to pick up the food, when it's market day, you get to commune with your neighbors, you get to talk to people. I have never, in our sites, we started having our first markets in the backyard. We had a backyard farm, 2 acres, in East Point, and I never saw any disharmony there. People of different backgrounds, different cultural experiences were able to come together in harmony and peace while picking up their food, having conversations about recipes and how to prepare the food, and just wonderful harmony. I mean, and that was a beautiful community is what we saw. Now, that model has evolved. You still have Tule Living Well still has CSA, but we are the markets, the interest in the food outgrew our site. I wasn't able to offer honey and bread or meat at our market, so came together with other local producers in the community farmers markets, which is promulgated. At that time, you were hard-pressed to find a single market in the town, never mind the fact that today you can find a market just about every day of the week somewhere in the greater Atlanta area. So it was an evolutionary process. And now with this pandemic, seeing people wanting to grow their own food, getting food in the ground because they can't get it from the market. They're dumping food all over the country. You have Big Ag, the Department of Agriculture, all those folks telling you that the system is broke. Farmers are leaving food in the field, and that's crazy. It didn't make any sense.
Brother Nur, we have a couple of callers on the line. Let's open up their line and get some questions and some comments in the time we have remaining. Caller, last
Thank
four
you.
Numbers, 8141. We're opening your line, 8141. Please tell us your name and where you're calling from, and ask your question or make your comment.
Yes, my name is Kenneth Simmons. I'm calling from Orlando, Florida. Brother, I'm wanting to start growing my own food. But I have no idea or no clue. What would be the first thing that you would suggest that I do?
How much land do you have?
Well, I just have my backyard.
Okay, fine. I would
But just a second. I would tell you that we used to have these community gardens, and I used to own a plot, but I hadn't been there in a while, and I don't know if they've given my plot away. But we do have a community garden where you can go and grow your own food. So I would like to start back that. At the community garden.
Yes, sir. Well, here's what I recommend. For people who have small plots of land and not a lot of experience, I highly recommend using a raised bed. A raised bed is good because it helps you control weeds better. You can control the soil better. It's easier to work. And 4x8 is the ideal size because you can get 8-foot lengths of lumber from the Lowe's, Home Depot, wherever you get your supplies. And you want to have it at least 12 inches, 2x12s. You just take three of them, cut one in half, tack them together. Then you can get your dirt, put it in there, some compost, and you're good to go. It's really easy. You don't have to stand out there plowing up the ground. You can do all the work with a hoe, a rake, and a shovel. But one step even further than that, I think people should take the opportunity to just grow something somewhere, whether it's your balcony, your front yard, your backyard, your kitchen window. You can do it in 5-gallon buckets. Just grow something. But if you really want to grow food to be able to take care of your family, put a raised bed out there in your garden. Then you don't have to worry about getting a tractor in there or plow to dig it up. You can put your own soil and control it yourself. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes. What I would like to do is start growing in the buckets first. So what would I do for that?
Same thing. I would use a 5-gallon bucket. You can get soil, compost at Lowe's, Home Depot, any of those garden supply places. Do you have any? You're in Florida. There's not many woods in Florida. You need to inoculate that soil. Get some light into those buckets. If you have some woods, some bushes around, we can get some of the soil that's around it already has some light and inoculate what's in your buckets. You'll be good to go. Easy. Get some open pollinated heirloom seeds, put them in there, or you can just buy some seedlings, some plants, and buy a tomato plant and put it in the bucket, and you'll be good to go. You'll do very well. The bucket should have a hose in the bottom so it can drain well, and you'll be good to go.
Okay. I'm planning on buying your book. Will that also assist me?
That's funny. No. Here's how I'll help you. I tell folks, you want to know how to grow a tomato, that's not in my book. You want to learn how to build a community, that's in the book. But there are so many resources online, that books, that you can get information on how to grow specific vegetable plants. That is not in the book. But you can get the book online from my website, which I would be very grateful, thenurrygroup.com. Just click the book button, and I will send you a copy. I'll sign it and send it to you. But unfortunately, I don't have the techniques for growing food in there.
Okay. Thank you very much. And
thank
keep
you,
up
brother.
Good work.
Thank you, sir.
All right, brother. Caller 3440. Caller, last numbers 3440. Your line is open. I think it is. Let's see. There we go. Please give us your name and where you're calling from.
Yes. Greetings, brothers. A very, very interesting program. My name is Shabaka. I'm calling from Baltimore, Maryland. And I hate to take you back, but I wanted to ask this question, but I had some difficulties with my phone line. And that was when you were really dealing with the whole seed process. And my question is, the development, if you think it is possible, you know, with the control that Europeans have of our seedling, of producing or trying to establish, I guess what I would call seed banks and exchanges, where you would collect seeds for different crops, and then, you know, sharing among the community, particularly if, you know, to reduce or the control that Europeans have of seeds, trying to infiltrate GMOs and all that other kind of stuff. What's your take on that? I'll wait and listen to you, Swing.
Yes, sir. I think seed exchanges are very important. They happen all over the country. You have a good number of them up where you are. I'm familiar with a lot of the work that's going on in Washington and Baltimore. The easiest way for you to find a seed exchange near you is to go online and just Google seed exchange, because those are the folks who are they're only going to have heirloom seeds, open pollinated seeds. That's the whole purpose and function. When you're first starting out growing food, you're going to have difficulty saving seed. It's just a little bit difficult because you have to leave the plants in the ground and let them go all the way to seed. You could be replanting with some food for yourself. But my suggestion is go to the internet, put in seed exchanges, and I promise you that you're going to get a list of opportunities and resources for you to participate in and with. Good question.
Thank you, Brother Shabaka. Brother Nuri, we have just a few minutes left. Anything that you want to share with our listening audience that we haven't covered that you think would be helpful?
Yeah, grow your own. Grow where you are. Plant something. Be cognizant of what you put in your body. And in this era where we have government that lies to us, misinformation that's given to us, corporate control of so many aspects of our lives, you just got to stay awake, be aware, and most of all, be careful. In this pandemic, I don't know what, there's just so many different stories that are being told, but we need to protect ourselves, protect our children, protect our families, protect our community, and build together. I think the major lesson that I have learned is the necessity of collaboration and cooperation. You got to work together. Old African proverb, you want to go fast, go by yourself. You want to go far, you got to bring folks along with you. And I think that that's one of the things that has been lacking in the black community is the level of collaboration and cooperation, and I highly recommend that we do that.
Well, Brother Nuri, it's been a very enjoyable hour with you. The time has flown by, and we haven't even scratched the surface. I wonder if you'll be available to come back on to our program and share more at a later date.
Oh, yes, sir. This is what I do. By God's grace, I'm still doing it, and I would love to continue. I've enjoyed this very much. As I said earlier, the questions that you ask are very informative in of themselves. So I'd be glad to join.
Well, thank you. And
thank
family.
You for, and thank you for
having me. This is Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Thursday night broadcast. We come to you every Thursday from 9 to 10. As you've probably realized by now, it has been our tremendous pleasure and privilege to have with us tonight Brother Rashid Nuri. He's at thenurigroup.com. That's N-U-R-I group.com. You can go to his website, get information about his book, order a book, get a signed copy of his book. We'll be having him on our program again. We agree that the coronavirus pandemic has made all of us aware of how important it is to not be dependent on the Krogers and the Publix for our food, and to once again get our hands into the soil and regain the knowledge of feeding ourselves. We thank everyone for being on the call tonight. Thank you for your questions and your comments. Us Lifting Us as an economic development cooperative is building cooperatives around the country. And it is our goal that every place we put a Ulu Mart, they will be a farmer's market component in that Ulu Mart as the foundation of that marketplace. As Brother Rashid shared with us, that the ability to feed ourselves is the beginning of civilization. We thank you for being with us. Join us next Thursday, where we'll have another exciting program. Peace and blessings to each and every one of you. And we'll be back next week.